Hello and welcome to Men in Charge. I'm Kevin Decker.
And I'm Tony Flynn. You are here for Season 8, Episode 7, We're Not a Scientist. Kevin, we know that our favorite climate deniers assert skepticism while at the same time they're admitting ignorance. Could you explain that anomaly to me?
Yeah, well, that's correct. Tony and I both have doctors in front of our names, purely honorary, but
For our achievements.
We have the sheepskin for it. Yeah. But we're not scientists, but we recognize that if data is available that might show something like climate change is actually happening, and this data is, for example, your cousin had their body torn in half by a mega tornado in northern Louisiana. Or something. That's the sort of data.
And we're very sorry for that particular cousin, even though he wasn't your favorite cousin.
Yeah. You know, if you claim skepticism based on ignorance of existing data, then I think the problem is not with the data set, it's with you.
Yep. And we found out where you live, and we're very disappointed in your conduct, and we're going to be giving you a good talking to beyond the talking to that this introduction to the episode, We Are Not a Scientist, is already ladling on you. I hope you're feeling a little bit ashamed, a little bit small, because you should, because there's no room for the ham-fisted lift, just like it's a ham-fisted line of non-reasoning to say, well, we're not a scientist, so I don't believe anything.
Yeah. I don't know, folks. If we can resurrect dinosaurs like we've done in Jurassic Park, which I heard is real.
It's a movie, so it's real.
Yeah, we can certainly show that climate is changing around the world and not for the better. Hey, let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, when there's no electricity anymore, you're not going to be listening to Men in Charge. If that is not a great reason to get out there and change your habits right away, I don't know what is.
Well, there are a number of things. I mean, from maybe hanging up your laundry to dry, not driving so much, ride your bicycle.
Yeah.
Put solar panels on your house using a federal grant as soon as we get those.
That's right.
There's a lot you can do, and it's your response. Am I hectoring people enough, Kevin?
No, I think you're right. I think we need to put fewer tarps over our grass and everything that you mentioned as well.
Have your neighbors been tarping
their
grass again?
They've been tarping again, yeah. There's a message spelled out there. It's just their lawns are so huge, I can't see it unless I go up in the airs. They are.
But they're riding mowers that are belching out the gas. Oh, gasoline leaf blowers. Do you think we need more of those or less?
Those are delightful.
All right. Well, I'm trying to work off some of the fury, and I've worked off a little bit. Perhaps enough where we could talk about the segments coming up in today's episode, which is We Are Not a Scientist.
We are not a scientist, but we're certainly smart enough to know about the four sketches that you're about to hear on today's episode. The first one is a return to the universe of heaving bosoms, Tony. And I think something dramatic happens with the Ridgely family in this one, right?
Yes, the overly scrupulous character, Grantley Ridgely, who's choked with rectitude and feverish goodwill, has made a radical decision that will shake up the Ridgely household and throw the estate into complete disarray. So hold your teacups carefully as you listen.
That's right. You'll be wanting more after hearing. You'll get it when you listen to the episode. After that, we have a return to a sketch we have not heard for a long time, and that's Scales of Justice. It's the adventures of Balthazar Q. Esterhazy, a trilobite lawyer, and this takes place billions of years ago in the Paleotethys Ocean.
Or 6,000 years ago, if you're not very well informed about the age of the Earth.
That's a really good point. The chronology of it is all in question if you're kind of just ignorant.
Well, remember, those fossils were placed by aliens to test our faith.
And the aliens were prompted to place the fossils by Satan. So exactly. There you go, Prince of Liars right there. Yep. After that, we have one of our local interest radio interviews with a gentleman named Hugh Green, if I remember that correctly.
Yes. He's a docent at an art museum / bank. And we're going to hear why banks and art museums have rather more in common with each other than you would think. Also, there's gunplay. So hear that.
No, that's very exciting right there. And last but not least, we here at Men in Charge are really interested in promoting entrepreneurial enterprises. And so we'll be looking in at the People's Veterinarian, we have long believed that there's been a niche, right, for veterinarians that work on human beings rather than other animals. And this sketch explores it. It's a great sketch, Tony.
It does. We visit with a patient who comes by and who is given a thorough going over by a veterinarian for people.
Yeah. So get those calming pheromones ready, ladies and gentlemen, because this is going to blow up the internet.
Right. It will. And they use the big needle for the injections.
So, Madge, it's almost time for our show to start. What episode are we on? 9? Are we on the air? Oops. Okay, here we go. Greetings, listener. I'm Emma Whipred, Lower Heights Public Radio Cultural Affairs Announcer. It's time for the 9th episode of our radio romance drama, Heaving Bosoms.
Come on, Emma. Just because you and your pet chicken had another late night at the Dewdrop Inn doesn't mean you shouldn't keep better track of our start time. For this 9th episode, we return to Ridgely Manor, home of Lord Grantley Ridgely and his brother, Bentley Ridgely.
Wait, it's my home too, Madge. And don't forget Coachman Coors and the crone, who is pregnant.
Gwyneth, first, since you're the housemaid, I'm not so sure you deserve a mention in the opening credits. And second, since you brought it up, I don't see that you can blame me for the crone getting pregnant. Talk to Coachman Coors about that.
But Madge, you're the writer.
And you're the bossy little malapert who ought to be cleaning something somewhere. Don't you have some 19th century dust to take care of? Emma and I have work to do.
Ugh, angels! How could I ever have thought those voices were angels?
Now, where were we?
Madge, you know Gwyneth is right. We've got serious problems with character and plot development. Bentley is a skirt chaser. The crone has morning sickness. And we haven't heard from Lord Grantley Ridgely since episode 3.
That self-satisfied blunderbuss. All he seems to do is gallop his stallion across the moors, foisting random good deeds on the unsuspecting populace. Well, I guess we ought to see what's going on. And here we go.
Whoa, Ramrod, whoa!
Greetings, my lord. 'Tis a long while since we've seen you and your mighty stallion.
Greetings, Coachman Coors. It is a powerful amount of work I have been doing, and I must call all of you together to acquaint the household with changes in the offing.
I think we've all been wondering what passes with you, my lord. I know that the crone and I have had many a sleepless night.
Oh, yes, we have.
Please, you two.
Calm down, good people. Please, be seated. I come with inspiring news from Chugglewit Abbey in East Overbaringford, where I have been staying. I am proud to announce that they have accepted me as a novice.
Wait, Madge, he's going to be entering a monastery in the middle of a romance story?
To be honest, Emma, he was so clueless before. I can't see that becoming a monk is much of a change. Let's see how he's going to handle this.
I will be a permanent resident at the monastery and plan on taking holy orders at the successful conclusion of my novitiate.
Will there be a vow of celibacy? Ah, there must be. I'm sorry, brother. Surely this is a vow made to be broken, or at least bent in some charming and surreptitious manner. One could become the star of the confessional.
Nay, brother, do not play the cockapert. I am most serious in this business. I have prayed these many long nights to Our Lady of Sanctimony that I might find the proper solution to care for all of you. Ordinarily, I would grant all my lands to the Holy Mother Church.
My income.
But instead, I expect two of my younger brothers to manage Ridgely Manor. Bentley, may I call upon you to guide the others? You are familiar with the day-to-day business of the manor. but my brother Wesley went to sea many years ago and may not be known to some of you.
Wesley?
He's new to us.
If you radio listeners don't pipe down, we'll put an end to this episode right now.
Aww.
Better. Now, let him finish.
Wesley left Ridgely Manor at 13 to become a ship's boy. He has been gone quite some time. But upon receiving my recent missive, he pledged to arrive home soon. I think you'll find he is a ship-shape sort of man who will keep a steady hand on the affairs of the estate. Of course, Bentley's skills are already known to you.
And there are some of you who might like to acquaint yourselves further with some of my special skills.
No, thank you, good sir. Perhaps those skills need a more appreciative audience.
She's right, Bentley. I dare say that's enough. In a fortnight, then, the Abbot of Chugglewit comes bringing me a humble donkey so that I may ride to my new home. Bentley, I leave my stallion Ramrod in your care.
Can we change the horse's name?
Oh my! After that stunning revelation, our time is up for today, listener. Good job today, Madge. I'd say we've put in an excellent episode's work. Time to take the chicken down for a little R&R at the Dewdrop. Tune in to the next episode of Heaving Bosoms, listener, when we hear Bentley say,
"My dear older brother, in on a stallion, out on a jackass."
And we hear the crone say,
"One of those chickens seems to be having trouble walking a straight line."
What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor early in the morning? Way, hey, up she rises. Way, hey, up she rises. Way, hey, up she rises early in the morning.
Welcome to the year 458 million BCE and another episode of The Scales of Justice, the courtroom drama adventures of Balthazar Q. Esterhazy, Trilobite at Law. Esterhazy fights to prosecute the worst bottom feeders in the Paleotethys Ocean and put them behind bars of iron-hard coral for good.
Order. Order in the court. Now, the time for today's kangaroo court has run out.
Aww.
Don't make me rule you in contempt. You kangaroos are too cute. I really love their little fuzzy-wuzzy noses in particular.
These so-called kangaroos, if that is their real species name, also exist today, almost 440 million years before they're supposed to? An anachronism. Do you think, boss?
An anachronism? Where?
Calm down, sir. An anachronism is anything that exists outside of its proper time.
Stop repeating after me, horseshoe crab bailiff. That's what I said. We're out of proper time for that damn kangaroo court.
Your blood pressure, sir.
Good, good. I can't stand those land-loving vertebrates. You can't trust them. No backbone. Now, what is today's case?
Well, Your Honor, it's an alleged case of murder at the third degree.
Don't you mean murder in the third degree?
I could say that, Your Honor. But after you give the case a hearing, you'll come to think that'd be bad grammar.
Was that bad grammar? I wish you'd shut up, Dusty the Horseshoe Crab Bailiff. Let's start. Where's that good-looking son of a bitch, Balthazar Q. Esterhazy, whom they call Trilobite at Law?
He's not right here, Your Honor.
Ow, 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 ow.
Sorry, Squirt the Sea Cucumber Paralegal, but what are you doing standing behind the courtroom door made of solid coral?
I think you damaged my well-hidden echinoderm gonad with the door, Lapworth.
Cephalopod at Law, Lapworth. You're 1.5 minutes late for our trial of the case of the giant tube worm versus Precambrian Hydrothermal Vents, LLC.
Well, if I'm late, then what does that make Esterhazy? He's never on time. Yet, do you ever find fault with him?
Please shut up, Lapworth, or I'm going to have to find you in contempt for extreme stupidity. Dusty the Horseshoe Crab Bailiff, would you call the first witness for the plaintiff while we stall for Esterhazy's eventual arrival?
I call to the stand Melchior K. Swearingen, otherwise known as Giant Tube Worm. Would you raise your right... Oh, this complicates things. Your Honor, the witness is a worm.
I'm happy to take the oath.
Son, I'm not sure if you can be a witness. Without the threat of sanctioning divine force, I don't know if you can be trusted to take an oath.
I'm right here, Your Honor.
Ow, 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 ow.
Esther Hazy, you idiot. You've burst in at the least dramatic time possible.
When are we going to get a laugh track for this hijink-filled entrances like this one, Your Honor?
For once, I'm forced to agree with Lapworth. You're inexcusably late, Esther Hazy.
My sincere apologies, y'all. I lost my money in the vending machine and had my pygidium, my tail, way up the delivery chute trying to get my Doritos. See, this would be another good place for the laugh track to break out and synthesize merriment. Now, let's get to that case.
Melchior K. Swearingen, a.k.a. Giant Tubeworm. You bring a criminal complaint against Precambrian Hydrothermal Vents, LLC, that, in about the year minus 458 million, give or take a million, the defendant did willfully boil the decedent you represent, that decedent being Francis Xavier Uke, otherwise known as also Giant Tubeworm.
Precambrian Hydrothermal Vents, LLC, turned up the heat at the vent that me and my bestie FX like to sun ourselves at. They turned it up, a fraction of a degree by a fraction of a degree.
Ah, I see. And 3 degrees later, boiled Giant Tubeworm.
I was only saved from the fate myself by FX's proximity to the vent.
And hence, Your Honor, the charge of murder at the third degree.
These cases get more and more bizarre.
If you can't stand the heat, Lapworth, then you'd probably stay away from the hydrothermal vents. And, Your Honor, if I may skip directly to my closing arguments...
Do it, Esther Hazy, while the court is gripped helplessly by your charisma.
Quote, stay away from the hydrothermal vents, unquote, as I said. And there it is, right there. The whole case is resolved in favor of my client, Precambrian Hydrothermal Vents, LLC.
What precisely is your meaning, Esther Hazy? Come on, squirt it out.
First of all, no one in their right mind would stand so near such a vent. The temperature is scalding.
But when you live at 40,000 fathoms beneath the ocean's surface, the cold...
In any case, the victim's state of mind is academic. There simply is no charge of murder at the third degree. No crime has been committed.
But I filed my paperwork with the charge murder in the third degree. Your Honor, there's been a procedural error.
These papers say at, not in.
When will you get it through your thick cephalopod shell, Lapworth? The ink you use always runs. We're underwater, for heaven's sake.
I decide this case in favor of Precambrian Hydrothermal Vents, LLC.
Esther Hazy, I'll get you for this.
With another legal victory for Balthazar Q. Esther Hazy, this has been the Scales of Justice for this week. Join us next week when Squirt the Sea Cucumber Paralegal will say...
Here you go, Esther Hazy. Just as you requested, your writs of habeas corpus.
AutoExec.umb, open, colon, file name, colon, men in charge, transitional material, run. Men in charge, a hallmark of intellect, ha, ha, ha.
Greetings, listener. I'm Priscilla Pinkerton, Lower Heights Public Radio talk show host. This morning, we're visiting with Hugh Green, professional art museum volunteer. Hugh is going to take us on a tour of the latest exhibitions at the Lower Heights Museum Savings and Loan. So tell me, Hugh, isn't it a little bit unusual to have a museum as part of a savings and loan?
Not at all, Priscilla. We here at LHMSL pride ourselves on the many conceptual links between the art world and the corporate world. If you are going to hang a painting, who doesn't want to partner with the folks who own the wall on Wall Street? After all, LHMSL means fine visual product.
Wait, Hugh, that doesn't make any sense at all. And isn't your tagline cribbed from an old cigarette advertising slogan?
Exactly, Priscilla, you are so right. Who better to show the art world the way to promote itself than a tobacco company that hooked several generations on a product that causes a slow and painful death? If they can sell tobacco to millions, then artists and galleries should be able to admit being a part of the corporate world. Why shouldn't we own up to merchandising great works of art? Just think,
You're at work, getting a bit on the edgy side. You turn to your coworker and say, "Hey, I can't wait till lunch. I've got to take a gallery break. Just 5 minutes with a Frida Kahlo painting, and I'll be right back." If people would walk a mile for a camel, just think what an easy sell a Monet print would be.
Great, Hugh. Maybe we can move on and actually look at some of the artwork here in the museum.
I'd like to make a deposit today.
Oops, sorry. I'm the art museum volunteer. The teller's window is over on that side.
Art museum? I knew I should have used the drive-thru. But what's all this stuff on the walls? You're calling that artwork?
Oh, yes, we are, ma'am. Wouldn't you like to take a painting home today?
I'm just trying to make a deposit.
No artwork today?
You used to hang the cowboy paintings that my Uncle Elroy did.
Well, sometimes it's a bear market even in the art business.
I guess your corporate model has its ups and downs. Savings and loans, tobacco companies, are these really the blueprints you want to follow? Perhaps we could talk about the artwork itself.
Yes. That's why we're here. Over on this side...
I need to speak to your loan officer.
Of course. We have a very active art on loan program. Why, you could just look
No,
over...
I need a car loan.
Wouldn't you rather simply...
No, unless I can put that sculpture in gear and drive it to work. I need a car loan.
Hugh, the artwork?
Oh, of course, Priscilla, of course. Let's look at... Wait. Oh, no. What's going on? That guy's got a mask and a gun.
Hands up and nobody gets hurt. Hands up, everybody, now. Okay, honey. Okay. You, honey, take these bags and empty out all the cash drawers. Shut up and make it snappy.
Perhaps, sir, in the interim, we could take a brief moment and I could interest you also in one of these fine works of art. Why, this one here would be excellent over anyone's sofa.
What? What are you talking about? Oh, I see. Wow. Yeah. I like that real well. I'll just take that too.
Freeze! You're under arrest.
I can't believe it. Nabbed by a Bob Ross landscape.
You have the right to remain silent, whatever you do say.
Well, Hugh, it appears you're quite the hero.
See, Priscilla? I told you that the corporate art model was a winner.
And that's all the time we have today for Hugh Green, Professional Art Museum Volunteer. Tune in next time when we hear Hugh say...
Hey, what about Big Pharma? Opioids? What a great model for marketing these lithographs.
Hello, listener, and welcome to the Lower Heights Radio Arts and Business Beat. I'm Stephanie Gardenplaster. Coming right up is the recycling report, and then news about the broken crockery sale at Gardner Gardens in Upper Lower Heights, followed by a review of this weekend's not-to-be-missed arts event, the 8th graders' musical adaptation of Diderot's Encyclopedia. But first, for the business beat, it's who's new in pumping up the economy in Lower Heights? Today, it's Dr. Griff Griffin, the people's veterinarian. We're coming to you live now from Dr. Griffin's medical center near the scenic dumping grounds of Pansy Hollow. Dr. Griffin, why do they call you the people's veterinarian? Is it because you treat the common folk rather than the coastal elites? Is there perhaps a crypto-revolutionary leftist cast to your practice?
Not sure what you're getting at, Stephanie. Anyway, I'm a veterinarian, but for people.
Listener, we're about to find out what it means to be a veterinarian, but for people. By violating any number of HIPAA privacy rules, I'm able to speak to you now as Dr. Griffin examines a patient.
Jump up on the table. Good boy, Max.
Actually, I'm an adult, Dr. Griffin. I think the use of my first name here is unprofessional and quasi-infantilizing. Please address me as Mr. Filton.
Call me Griff. How about a treat?
Actually, I was hoping for a treatment for my sciatica. And why did you throw that brown lump of cereal at me? Stop that!
I find it calms my patients to give them a treat. Settle down now. Since you haven't visited us before, I need to do a general examination before looking at the particular complaint.
What do you check for first, Griff?
First, for lice and ticks.
Stop handling me!
Given Max's baldness and general hairlessness from his diminished testosterone in late middle age, lice and ticks aren't going to be much of a problem so long as he stays in the backyard.
My backyard? I'm a partner in the fourth largest accountancy firm in the city.
Then I spread his lips to check his teeth.
Keep your hands out of my mouth!
You've got a lot of tartar buildup and some receding of the gums. Start chewing on Nyla bones regularly for at least 2 months. It'll freshen your breath, too. Next, we look for pink eye.
Ow! I've had just about enough of this.
Now be a good boy, Max. I'm nearly done here. Stop struggling. Stephanie, could you help me hold him? I'll need to administer a calming injection.
Sure thing, Griff.
Take your hands off me! Ow!
Wow, Griff. That was really quick.
I have a lot of difficult patients, so I keep this needle handy. How do you feel now, Max?
Oh, okay. But what about my sciatica?
Well, Max boy, because I had to anesthetize you, we won't be able to check on that complaint until tomorrow. So we'll have to kennel you here overnight for observation.
What? Kennel? No. I have meetings. I parked my car at a meter. It'll be towed.
You can dream about chasing cars all night, Max. We'll see you in the morning. Stephanie, could you give me a hand taking him into the back?
Sure thing, Griff.
Wait.
Well, listener, that's all the time we have now for our visit with Dr. Griff Griffin, the people's veterinarian. Tune in again next time when we hear Griff say...
I think we lost your paperwork, Max. I guess it's another night in the kennel for you.
So, Kevin, as we remember back upon this episode and reflect, which of the segments that we just heard do you think is most likely to change people's lives?
Well, Tony, you know, I'd like to say that it's the one that I wrote, The Scales of Justice.
It was really good.
But I'm going to say it was that sketch.
Okay.
I'm going to say that when people realized that trilobites did not exist 6,000 years ago, when they were instantly created in a flash by some sort of bizarre divine entity, that's going to change some people's lives.
Yes. Because I think they'll really be stricken with the verisimilitude of the lines, of the dialogue.
Yeah.
Because you
it's
did
all researched.
Researched, like, and you summoned it from billions of years ago.
Did. Not 6,000 years ago.
Not 6,000, billions. You can tell ago. Because of the echoes of the voices that they come from a deep cavern of your soul.
And speaking of the echo of voices that may or may not be heard by anybody, it's my turn to thank today's cast. Scott Herrick, Luke Hamburg, Ann Porter, Nancy Roth, Liz Rognes, Davis Hill, Kevin Decker, Steve Lloyd, Tony Flynn, Nisha Schramm, Scott Kinderpile, and Ryan Weldon.
Today's segments were written by Kevin Decker, Ann Porter, and Tony Flynn. But we also need to thank the Pod of Threeness, Carrie Boyce, Vern Windham, and the man who lends you your own money for only a fee handling fee, Brian Lindsay.